Oh, shoot. I was having so much fun singing the song. I'm like, oh, I'm up next. Okay, where am I at? Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I love that song, and I was singing along until you just did that fabulous stuff, and we're all over the place. How many of you are familiar with Daniel Neiman's song? Yeah. Wasn't that wonderful? And thanks for the creative, all that stuff. That was delightful. I'm sorry, say? Oh. Hey, John, you rock. We know that already, but thank you ever so much. Yes, indeed. So how many of you had a chance to be here for the 12 Powers movie that we showed last Sunday? Many of you were here. You're aware that James Twyman, who is a musician, a troubadour, has gone around the world, has planned World Days of Prayer to pray over villages held by ISIS. Collaborated with Unity in appreciating this wonderful book that was written by Charles Fillmore as part of the foundation of the whole Unity movement. And as I sat in prayer, which I do in preparation for each Sunday and in what Spirit seems to be bringing to be shared amongst all of us, it seemed so vital and important for us as we are moving forward. Our annual meeting is next week. The church is continuing to evolve and change and move forward. And I thought it would be a wonderful time to do a bit of an overview, to get a sense of our roots, where we come from, and how important it is, because as we move forward, it's wonderful to stand upon that foundation, yet be willing to embrace and move forward into that which is new and is changing. And so today will be part one. I'm talking about our spiritual community and an understanding that we are part of a greater unity vision. And it's easy sometimes as we here in the South Bend, we don't have other unity churches that are close by. And so we kind of, you know, we're in this little enclave, and you know, we get a little bit self-focused, and we forget. We forget that we are connected to a spiritual movement that was founded back in the late 1800s, early 1900s by Charles and Myrtle Fillmore. And I love, I'd like to share a little quote out of, Neil Vall's book that, actually we have in the bookstore. There's a lot of information in here. It's called The Unity Movement. He was an outside source. He helped to write so that people would understand our roots and where we came from and the teachings of Charles and Myrtle. And I could actually do and have done in the past historical talks. And as I was like pulling up all this stuff, I thought, holy cow, I'm going to make them sit there for like 3 hours, and they're not going to do that. So I'm going to do just a little light touch on it right now. But it fascinated me because having my roots in unity and having grown up, I forget that a few years have been added onto this little dear body of mine. And, you know, I'm not 10 and 11 and 12 years old anymore. And that was a ways back there, and stuff has changed, you know. So a lot of the foundation that I grew up with and know, not everyone had the opportunity to be aware of that. And so I love sharing it, and I love bringing us back to the roots of who we are so that it enables us to continue moving forward. So here's what I'd like to share with you from out of this Neil Vall's book. He says, many spiritual teachers have created a body of doctrine and presented it orally or in writing to sizable numbers of people. We certainly have had, over the ages, all kinds of spiritual teachers doing that. Few, however, have been successful in developing organizations for promulgating the teaching over time. The Fillmores, Charles and Myrtle, and their sons Lowell, Rickert, and Royal are among the few gifted spiritual innovators who created, over the course of the 20th century, a successful worldwide spiritual movement. The Unity Movement. Its origin can be traced to prayer meetings held in 1889 in the Kansas City living room of Charles and Myrtle Fillmore. And I just love thinking about that particular time back in the mid to late 1800s and the beginning of the 1900s, where there was a shift in the consciousness of many on the planet who began seeking a different understanding of what spirituality was all about. And I had to write down some of these names. I've got to grab this card too, because there's so much. You know, we have been immersed in a paradigm of thinking for centuries that placed power outside of ourselves, have we not? We look to this something from on high, whether it be God, whether it be the king of the realm, whether it be the church, something outside of ourselves, of course, should know better and should guide us. And so there has been a paradigm, even to this day, though that has been changing in the last 10 to 20 years, but this paradigm of from on high down, right? So there's the leader up here, and then there's all the followers. So this has been the construct of church. It's been the construct of countries and nations, because people sought that they had that need to have power in order to be okay, to have power over, and not to understand the depth of an inner power that is the presence and the awareness of God that is so different. So at that time, people were exploring. There was Emanuel Swedenborg. There was also Franz Anton hypnotism. Okay. There was Ralph Waldo Emerson. There was Phineas Quimby. A lot of these names you've heard. Warren Felt Evans. He was a part of the Theosophists. There was Mary Baker Eddy and Emma Curtis Hopkins, who were the beginning of Christian Science. There was Transcendentalism. There was Spiritualism, Unitarianism, Theosophy. There were all these things because people were seeking to have an understanding of science, which had absolutely all of a sudden exploded at that time, and an understanding of how spirituality or where religion fit into that, because there was always such a separation. And Buddhists and other teachings brought in ideas that were different than this power outside of ourselves. And these wonderful people were beginning to have these study groups and beginning to explore. And Charles and Myrtle Fillmore, they were very involved with all of these people. They went to some of their trainings. They did things together. Myrtle had tuberculosis throughout her life as a child and young adult. And she went to a meeting, that was given by Eugene, Weeks. He was a part of the Christian Science group. And out of that, she had her own realization that she was made in the image and likeness of a God that was not a physical form, but the energy of all creation. And that as such, she did not inherit sickness. As such, she was created in an image that is limitless and powerful and goes beyond what we see with these eyes, these human physical eyes in our outer realm. That's God calling. Oh boy. I love it when that happens. It's like little angels going, okay, that's a good one. Listen, pay attention. Because it is. It's so powerful, friends. It's so powerful. I mean, we hear these principles all the time. We come to unity. We hear the principles. I grew up with stuff, so I say words. And then I realize it doesn't mean the same thing to somebody else. You know, we talk about Christians or being Christian. People ask me, are you Christian? I'm like, I don't really know how to answer that. Because I follow the teachings as I understand them of Jesus, the man who had a personal awareness and understanding differently than how it's presented throughout most of the paradigm and the thought beliefs of most churches. We look at Jesus as a teacher and a way shower who had that realization, as Myrtle did, of that, well, Jesus, I think, had it first. He came a little bit sooner than Myrtle did. But, you know, it's like this amazing realization of the limitless power that is the truth of who we are. And we forget that because we're so immersed in, you know, this being the solid world that we're in. And Jesus came here not to save us. That's a paradigm of, okay, we follow the leader up here. You know, someone else will do it for us and then we will be okay. That is not the concept that Jesus taught. The idea of salvation came from previous religious belief systems of sacrifice and those kinds of things. And so it was logical, it was, you know, pretty much expected that the consciousness of people would feel that way. But Jesus was saying, friends, wake up. You know, I have a new message. And he said, I don't come to break the law, I come to fulfill it. I come to bring you a deeper message that hasn't been shared before in the same way. And he walked as a man who came into that understanding that the presence and the power of God is within all creation. And just like Myrtle Fillmore, who went to this wonderful Christian Science meeting and had a realization that she was not made in weakness. She was not created in weakness. She was created in wholeness. And she took the next year to sit in prayer until she was healed. Now, you know, I don't know about you, but I know myself, and I'm just a little bit impatient at times, you know. So I'll pray for maybe one day, maybe a week, maybe 2 weeks. And it's like, man, this thing didn't go away yet, you know. So the process of prayer is an ongoing process. And it is something that we're invited into at a very deep level. But Myrtle had such an awareness that she knew, she wasn't going to listen to the monkey mind chatter like I talked about last week. She knew, and she sat in that silence and was healed. And then she created Silent Unity, which was the prayer foundation of unity. And people would call in and get letters from her, healing letters and prayers. And there were so many healings done, as Christ did. And that was as Christ had that awareness of the inner presence of God within him. And when he said, the Father and I are one, it was that place within him that invited us to be aware of that also. When he said, you will come to the Father through me, it wasn't through him personally. It was through a recognition of what he was teaching and his understanding. So I'm getting all ahead of myself because I get so excited about this stuff. But, you know, so, wait, I had another quote here. So the Fillmores began exploring all of these concepts and wanting to draw people together to explore spirituality. So they looked at Christian Science. They looked at Buddhism. They looked at Zen philosophy. They looked at mesmerism. They looked at all of these things. And then out of their own experiences, now Charles Fillmore, he was a realtor. He was a businessman. And he's, you know, he's going, oh my gosh, this stuff is kind of weird. I mean, really. But he saw Myrtle going through her experience and he said, okay, if I'm going to be a scientist, if I'm going to give this its due, I will take a year, I will sit every evening for 1 hour at the same time and see, you know, if this is just hoey baloney stuff, you know, what's the deal here? And so he did. And at first he was, you know, trying to go through his head. Okay, God, come on, talk to me, you know. That wasn't happening. He's like, oh, okay. We do that, don't we? You know, we I always say this, we do it bass-ackwards. You know, and we want it from out in instead of from inside coming out. But over that period of time, he began to have dreams, and it began to influence his life and things that were happening. And he realized Spirit was speaking to him in the only way it could get through him. Because he was like, okay, talk to me the way I want you to talk to me versus allowing Spirit to move. So Spirit goes, okay, well, when you're asleep, we're just going to have dreams come in there. And all of a sudden, all these things were leading him and guiding him. And ultimately, they went through, I mean, there's so much history here. They went through so many things. But ultimately, they began creating a group that would meet in their living room. And that became a larger group. And in his real estate, he wanted to leave the Kansas City area. He'd been doing that. He went and he did a silver mine, and then that fell through, and so they came back, and in Kansas City they went and they were going to buy a 40-acre tract of land. By the time they got there, it was already sold, but the realtor said, well, I have this 56-acre tract of land, which they bought outside of Kansas City, Missouri, and that's now the home of Unity Village. So they begin to invite people into an awareness, their awareness of the presence of God differently, the presence of God that Christ taught, that is the living essence of all creation and all goodness that comes from within. And they invited people to live from that awareness in their lives. And I'd like to share scripture with you from Ephesians 4. It says, I urge you to live a life worthy of the calling you have received. Be completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love. Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. There is one body and one Spirit, just as you were called to one hope when you were called. One Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is over all and through all and in all. So they began to put together, why I wanted to share that is that's that overall awareness of what we are truly about as spiritual community. It is about all of us being our individual selves. And being that unique spark and that unique light that we are, and bringing that to the collective whole. And in the process, as Charles and Myrtle Fillmore gathered more and more people together, and as is sort of the way of the world, they had never planned to start a church. But it ended up needing to flow in that particular function because that's how things work. And you have to follow the laws and you have to do things, and they created the School of Christianity, which is at Unity Village. They created Daily Word, and the publishing company, and so many more things. As Neil Volley said, you know, they actually put into practice and created a whole spiritual movement. So it is this amazing spiritual movement that we are a part of and that we stand on. And as we watched the movie last week, The 12 Powers, that was one of Charles' initial writings, one of his initial books. And it allowed people an understanding, and it taught them in going forward that he likened it to the 12 disciples and an attribute of each disciple. Now, are these the only ways to experience God? No, and that was never his intent. But it was his intent to teach through these 12 powers, which you see here on the windows, that those are the inherent, he called them powers, but I call them life strategies. I call them, you know, the tools that we use. These are the things that we can lay a hold of because they are the wisdom of God. And as we understand each of these principles, it allows us to live a life in a way that's different. You know, we kind of go, oh my gosh, all this stuff is happening to me and what am I going to do? Well, these are tools that help us and they're powerful and they have withstood time. I'm not 30 years old anymore and they've been around a long time before that, you know? And it's so powerful to help us in moving forward. So, what Charles Fillmore said in 12 Powers. He said, we find there is in man a knowing capacity transcending intellectual knowledge. One should give attention to this whispering of spirit in man. It is not of the intellect and does not originate in the skull. It is the development in man of a greater capacity to know himself and the purpose of creation. And then he goes on in Jesus Christ Heals. He says, God, this is Charles Fillmore, he says, God is discerned to be a mind principle, not some grand guy up there in the sky. Even though we say Father God or Mother God, it applies to the attributes of God, not the person. God is discerned to be a mind principle that requires the cooperation of its creators, because they are formed of it and in it and are so like it that there is virtual action and reaction between creator and creation. When we think and work in unity with the Father principle, with that guiding inspiration, the results are universally good. When we work without reference to the inspiring mind within, our work is usually unsatisfactory. Have you ever had some of those unsatisfactory experiences? You know, that deep inner part of us, that intuitive part of us that moves us forward, and we go, I'm not going to listen to that right now. I see this, you know, it's like the shiny thing, I'm going to go over here. It doesn't always turn out so good. But we always have that option to return to the inner knowing that guides us forward. So out of the principles that both Myrtle and Charles picked up from Christian Science, from mesmerism, from all the ideas that were out there at that time, they created something that Unity calls Unity Principles. I always refer to them as Truth Principles. And we call them the five basic principles. I've talked about them often. And yet, they are what overall help us to understand Christianity. When I said earlier, like, am I a Christian? Well, I follow Christ's teachings. But it doesn't mean the same thing as someone else who thinks they are Christian. So in these five basic unity principles, the first one is there is only one presence and one power active in the universe, and that's God. Good. Omnipotence. It's the energy of everything that is and of all creation. And it is founded in what we would call unconditional or universal love, not human emotional love, but the love of all being. It is creator creating. And the second principle is that our essence is of God. We are created in that image and likeness. Therefore, we're inherently good. We're inherently whole. We are inherently co-creatively powerful. By the thoughts of our mind, when we lay hold of the ideas that are the mind of God within us and draw them out, that is how we manifest into expression. So that's the third one. We are co-creators with God, creating reality through thoughts held in mind. Law of mind action. The law of attraction. Unity talked about the law of mind action a long time before Abraham Hicks came out with the law of attraction. Same thing. It's like that resonance of the thoughts within us are what draw to us that same energy. That's a principle of the universe. The fourth principle is prayer. Friends, it's like Charles Fillmore taking that time to be still, to be quiet, to go into that place where we listen beyond the mind chatter to the inner, still, small voice. And the power of prayer, because that is where we lay a hold of divine heart-mind ideas that allow us to put them forth and activate them into expression. And then the fifth one we kind of forget, because we do the prayer work, and we think, I'm good to go, right? But what we haven't then done is taken that thought idea and put it into action. The fifth principle is putting into action that which we know at that deeper truth. So it's about living into the truth principles, about practicing them. And so when we look at the difference between the concept of other churches and Christianity, which has often been from on high down, which says, we know, follow us. If you do this, you will be good, you will be okay. That is one paradigm, that is one way of doing something. We believe in unity. We believe that what Jesus was teaching and walking and exemplifying as a wayshower, he was a rabbi, he was a teacher. He said, these things shall ye do and even greater. He invited us into an awareness that we are not followers, friends. We are co-creators and we are powerful beyond our own imagining. And as we evolve in our spiritual awareness and in our world and in the ways that we have held what church is, what spiritual community is, as we evolve and we stand on these basic principles, we also shift into something greater. We have current day amazing truth principle teachers. Neil Donald Walsh, Gene Houston, Eckhart Tolle, some others. Who are your favorites? There we go. Wayne Dyer. Deepak Chopra, Stephen Covey, Greg Braden, Brené Brown. Who else? Ram Dass. Yeah. Did you? Okay. So wow. We have this plethora. I mean, we have a whole basket of wonderful wisdom to draw from. And so at Unity, and an understanding that we are not a church of followers. We are a spiritual community, a spiritual movement of collaborators. And this is where we need to shift to. Because in the 70s and the 80s and into the 90s, unity began to blossom because it brought a new idea. But then what happened is that as we are invited to be those creative individuals, what do we become? We kind of become like stray cats, don't we? You know, we all go in our own direction. And nowadays on, you know, on the internet, on anything, you have this wonderful material everywhere. And people say, well, I can meditate at home. I can go for a walk in the woods. Absolutely. I would hope you do. And yet what we are about now, friends, is a new paradigm shift. It is, you know, people sort of dispersed, and it is now our opportunity to understand the idea of collaboration. When we talk about a world of oneness, it does not mean we are alike. It means we are willing to come together and work together. And when we experience differences or things that don't mesh with us, we don't turn and walk away. We say, help me to understand. Help me to come together. Help me to be a part of a greater reality, a greater vision, a greater whole. So I had half of my stuff I didn't get to. So that's how it is. But that's why this is part one, and we'll get to part two next week, in speaking even more about where we are moving into, the vision and the dreams and these principles that are the foundation of who we are, that stand absolutely true and absolutely powerful in this day and age, yet which we can see in a new light that will allow us to move forward in ways that bring us these strategies and skills and positive life tools to be prosperous, to be joyful, to be embracive. So next week, be here or be square. You know, it's like that old statement. That's right. It's like, be a part of this dynamic motion forward that is creating anew in a vision that looks different. And man, how many of you love change? Not me. Not me. Many people do. They embrace it and they're great with it. I'm like, man, could you rub some of that off on me? Cause I'm like, ooh, but this is what I know, you know. So it takes me a little bit. I have to, you know, who jumps into the pool? Like, phew, there we go. Absolutely. Well, you know, I tend to kind of walk in a little bit of time, but see, that's wonderful too. So that's what we're about, friends. We are about walking into it and embracing something, releasing that which no longer serves us in order to embrace a new concept and a new idea that is so dynamic and is so exciting. Man, I want to be part of it. I have all my life. It's why I've been a part of Unity. And I had opportunities to go a lot of other places, but Unity has always drawn me to the realization of the teachings of Christ, which originate in love, the universal love of God that remind us that it's inherent in each of us and invites us to bring those gifts and that uniqueness into that greater whole that will power our world forward in such dynamic and positive ways. So friends, I hope you want to join with me, and I will close with one of my other quotes that I just love this, and this was by Runosuke Satoru. He was a Japanese writer and very insightful. Back actually in the time that 1892 to 1927, in that time that the Fillmores were, and he says, individually, we are one drop. Together, we are an ocean. Friends, let's be a part of that unity spiritual movement ocean as we go forward.